I've had a lot of coffee, and this one stands out. It's called Larry's Coffee. It has this really cute vibe to it, first of all. I've been drinking it in the mornings, and it's noticeably smoother. My favorite blend is Bean Martin. It just tasted so good. I immediately went and got a second cup of coffee. I just love the rich, dark flavor. It's got a little cartoon character on the bag, and he is drinking coffee, and he also has a martini because it's probably an espresso martini because, you know, he's Bean Martin. They have light, medium, dark roast, espresso, decaf. Larry's Coffee is independent, family-owned and operated, roasted in Raleigh, North Carolina for over 30 years. You can try this wonderful coffee and support the BGS Podcast Network at larryscoffee.com/BGS. Listeners of the BGS Podcast Network get a free gift with purchase when they purchase through that show link. And again, that's larryscoffee.com/BGS.
For just one time, I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of...
Welcome to this month's episode of Folk Files, a podcast where we try to trace one warm line through the wide, savage land of folk music history in an attempt to crack the mountain ramparts of ballads, shanties, and other old songs. I'm referencing the lyrics of Northwest Passage, which you can hear in the background, performed by its composer, Stan Rogers. The theme for this episode is the life and work of Stan Rogers, and I decided on this theme because over the course of 1 week, I had three people in the folk music world tell me that they didn't know who Stan Rogers was. I thought this was a travesty, not just because no life is complete without Stan's rich, unwavering baritone, but because I believe Stan Rogers is one of the best examples of a songwriter who has been able to create contemporary, traditional folk. I know that's basically an oxymoron. Tradition implies that something's been anchored by years of repetition. Contemporary is of the present. But what I mean is that Stan Rogers was able to distill old styles, traditions, and folk spirit into music that was immediately universal and timeless. He wrote true folk classics, and during the course of this episode, I want to explore what exactly it is about his music that makes it so quintessentially folk. Let's start with a brief summary of who Stan Rogers was before we dig into his biography. He is one of the most well-regarded singer-songwriters in Canadian history. To give you an idea of his popularity in Canada, when Morningside, a national radio program, asked Canadians to choose any song to replace O Canada as the national anthem, Northwest Passage won in a landslide. By the way, if you think you've heard Northwest Passage on this podcast before, you're right. I played it in the Greenland Whale Fisheries episode. If you want more info on the history of Northwest Passage, listen to that episode next. Stan Rogers's best-known songs are performed in a style inspired by traditional Celtic music, which paved the way for groups like the Rankins and Great Big Sea. Of course, while the Rankins and Stan Rogers tend to be very acoustic, Great Big Sea was known for adding rock elements, as you can hear.
I'm the boy, you know the world could be our oyster. You just put your trust in me, 'cause we'll keep the good times rolling. Wait and see, wait and see. Oh, wait and see.
Stan Rogers' songs are very much associated with the Maritimes, the region of Canada comprising Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and Prince Edward Island. He considered the Maritimes his spiritual home, since it's where both of his parents grew up and where he learned to play music. But he wasn't born there. Stanley Allison Rogers was born in Hamilton, Ontario. However, he spent his summers in Nova Scotia. His earliest memory was sitting at his grandmother's kitchen and listening to four of his mother's brothers playing country songs and singing along. When he was 5 years old, his uncle built him his first guitar out of birch plywood. His uncle made it in one day as a Christmas present, but Stan Rogers held on to it well into his adult life and whipped it out in at least one televised interview. Rogers taught himself how to play guitar, and when he was 14, he had his very first performance. He played songs by the American country star Jimmy Rogers at a coffee house. If you're unfamiliar with Jimmy Rogers, You might recognize this song, which he popularized. I knew it from the version in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? But here's Jimmy.
I had a friend named Ramblin' Bob, who used to steal, gamble, and rob. He thought he was the smartest guy in town. But I found out last Monday that Bob got locked up Sunday. They've got him in the jailhouse way downtown. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now.
So, a very different style from the Celtic-inspired pieces that Stan Rogers would play later in his life. Or was it? I think you can clearly hear the fact that Rogers played and listened to a lot of country in some of his songs, such as Make and Break Harbor.
Once more we tack home with a dry empty hold, saving gas with the breezes so fair. She's a kindly Cape Islander old, but still sound, but so lost in the long rider's shadow. Make and break and make do, but the fish are so few that she won't be replaced should she founder.
That slow waltz and moving bass line in the guitar is reminiscent of early American country music. The very first song that Rogers recorded was a single called Here's to You, Santa Claus. He recorded it in 1970 while he was attending teachers' college. He had been signed to the record label RCA Canada, and they were definitely setting him up as some kind of novelty act, as you can hear.
Hail to you, Santa Claus, come to me tonight. I've been a thoughtful little boy and I'm tucked in bed so tight. I've always done as I was told, always what is right. Hail to you, Santa Claus, come to me tonight.
But Rogers didn't want to perform music like that. So he left RCA Canada, and during the rest of his life, he never made it big with any recording company. He never got significant radio airtime. He gained his reputation by playing the folk and maritime festival circuits and through word of mouth. His agent, Jim Fleming, said that he never saw anything like it. Despite the fact that Stan Rogers had no major distribution, his fan base grew and he became beloved. At one point, he played a concert during a winter storm and people cross-country skied just to come see him. Stan's mother, Valerie Rogers, talks about how deeply connected Stan's fans felt to him. When Stan and his brother Garnet created their own record label, Fogarty's Cove Music, Valerie was the one who ran it. She said that fans would send Stan their birth announcements and then pictures of their babies. Fans felt like they shared in Stan's success, and apparently, vice versa. So what was it about Stan Rogers' music that caused his fans to feel so intimately linked to him? By combing through the words of his colleagues and loved ones, we can form a hypothesis. Eldon Monroe, a Nova Scotian historian and musician, explains that Stan Rogers wasn't a fisherman, but when he wrote about fishing, he was a fisherman. Ariel Rogers, Stan's wife, said that an ancient sailor once came up to Stan and said something like, "I've been fishing, man and boy, for over 70 years, and you say things I can hardly even dare to think." Meaning that Stan Rogers was able to write about an experience that he had never had in a way that perfectly and poetically distilled the life of a man who spent all his time at sea. It was the same thing with farmers, lock keepers, and other working people who he wrote about. As Canadian novelist Rick Salutin said after comparing Rogers to Shakespeare, Stan Rogers heightened the voice of the people. By the way, I mention lock keepers because of Stan Rogers' song titled Lock Keeper, which describes a conversation between a man in charge of a lock on a waterway and a seafaring man moving his boat through the lock. The seafaring man talks about some of his adventures, and then the lock keeper shares that his wife has just given him a son, to which the adventurer says, "A son? Is that all you've done?" It's a sweet song in which the lockkeeper ends up saying that he wouldn't trade an hour of his home life for the seafarer's entire life. Ariel Rogers believes that the song is semi-autobiographical and that both men represent pieces of Stan Rogers' life. Stan loved being out on the road, being adored, and having emotional connections to people. But he also longed to be home with Ariel, and eventually their children. He based the song on Chapter 9 of Wind in the Willows, in which the water rat converses with a seafaring rat. You can hear a little bit of the song here.
Then come with me, you say, to where the Southern Cross rides high upon your shoulder. Come with me, you cry. Each day attend this lock, you're one day older, while your blood grows colder. But that anchor chain's a fetter, and with it you are tethered to the foe. And I wouldn't trade your life for one hour of
So, one reason why he wrote such effective folk music is because he understood the voice of the folk. But another reason is because he had a love of history and a passion for teaching history. As Anne Walton wrote in her article, Fire in the Belly, A Short Reflection on the Late Stan Rogers, listen to the late folk singer's music, and you'll discover not only a stunning songwriter, but a passionate historian whose work was inseparable from the history of his country. Even though Stan Rogers' songs are rarely based on specific events from history, they are still steeped in historical understanding. I've already mentioned Northwest Passage, which discusses real Arctic expeditions and captures the socio-political desire to find a northern sea route between the Atlantic and Pacific. But many of Stan Rogers' songs indicate a deep knowledge of his country's history. Stan was once quoted as saying, "I hit upon the idea of taking my music in a kind of historical context, looking at the history of my country and its relationship to the rest of the world, and I started to write songs that reflected a kind of Canadian spirit." In interviews, Stan Rogers was always eager to share more history and to set the record straight. For example, in an interview on Canada After Dark, he talked more about the themes behind his song Guysborough Train, which sounds like this.
Now there's no train to Guysborough, or so the man says. So it might be a good place to be. So I sit in this station and I count up my change. And I wait for the Guysborough train.
Stan Rogers brought up lots of historical stories of times when the Guysborough Railroad, a project which would have revolutionized the lives of people living in Guysborough County, Nova Scotia, was repeatedly started and abandoned. As Anne Walton says, he shared these stories in a way that was passionate without being patronizing. When a guest on the talk show commented that Stan had revived a dying story, Stan kindly corrected them and explained that a book had recently been written on the subject and that it was for sale in local bookstores. When taking part in interviews in the United States, Stan was very prepared to give an abridged history of Canada so that American listeners would have context. So he was passionate not just about the folk surrounding him during his own lifetime, but also cared about the lives of folk who lived before, and cared about educating listeners about that history. I think a third reason why Stan Rogers' songs are such folk classics is that he deeply understood the genres and styles that he was writing in. A great example of this is the song Barrett's Privateers. Stan Rogers explained that he was hanging out with members of the band Friends of Fiddler's Green at a folk festival, and they were all singing sea shanties. He said, "They all knew the songs, and they could sing the leads in them. Well, I wanted a shanty that I could sing the lead in instead of just hanging back and singing harmony on the chorus. I wanted to lead one, so I had to write it. I love this reasoning. He didn't want to go find a sea shanty that the friends of Fiddler's Green didn't know. He wanted his own shanty, and so he wrote one.
Shook and pitched on her side.
How I wish I was in Sherbrooke now.
There it was smashed like a bowl of eggs, and the main truck carried off both my legs.
God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears.
Now I'm a
broken man on the Halifax Pier, the last of Barrett's privateers.
By the way, from what I've read, I'm pretty sure that that higher line with what I can only non-technically describe as yelps was sung by Stan's brother Garnet. I thought I'd share because I've always loved that voice part. Barrett's Privateers shows that Stan understood how sea shanties work. He wrote it in a mixed meter, meaning that the song jumps between time signatures from 2-4 to 3-4, which is uncommon in popular music, but quite common in sea shanties, where you need the rhythm to match the work being done. It may not perfectly map to a chore on a ship, though I have pushed the capstan round to Barrett's Privateers, but it's got the lurching quality of a shanty. The content of the song also demonstrates an understanding of shanties, since the whole thing is essentially about wanting to be home, back in Sherbrooke, a town in Nova Scotia. One of my favorite Stan Rogers songs, which demonstrates similar qualities, is Flowers of Bermuda. Here's a bit of that song.
Oh, there be flowers in Bermuda, beauty lies on every hand, and there be laughter, ease, and drink for every man, but there is no joy for me. For when we reach the wretched Nightingale, what an awful sight was plain. The captain drowned, was tangled in the mizzen chain, smiling bravely beneath the sea. He was the captain of the Nightingale, 21 days for pride in port. He could smell the flowers of Bermuda in the gale when he died on the North York shore. He was the captain of the Nightingale, 21 days from pride in port. He could smell the flowers of Bermuda in the gale when he died on the North York shore.
You've got another jaunty rhythm that seems to skip a beat, and a classic heroic story of a captain going down with his ship after assuring his crew's safety. Like the captain of the Nightingale, Stan Rogers' life ended too soon in a tragic accident. In 1983, as he was traveling home from the Kerrville Folk Festival in Texas, an electrical fire broke out on the plane, and Stan Rogers was one of the 23 people who were killed. He was 33. It's a sign of his larger-than-life status in the folk world that myths started springing up around his death. For example, people started claiming that he died from smoke inhalation after going back into the plane over and over to rescue people. There's no evidence to support this. And I think it's good to remember that Stan Rogers was just a man, not some grand hero. I've talked about how extraordinary his music is, but he was still a flawed human being. He was extremely sensitive, which resulted in empathy in his music, but also came with a slight temper. He apparently once got angry with his bass player and dropped him off at the side of the road and drove away. He went back for him eventually. Also, despite the fact that Stan was able to write about people's lives that were very different from his own and sing from varying perspectives, there aren't very many women in his songs. And his songs referencing the history of Canada barely touch on the Indigenous people who lived there. Like most men of his demographic living in the 20th century, Stan wasn't conditioned to notice when he was excluding minorities. As Anne Walton writes, "It is not so much the history in his music that holds my attention. If it did, I'd challenge the one warm line in his famous Northwest Passage, the white male heroes and the strong nationalist content." So he wasn't perfect, and I think that that's encouraging for anyone who wants to be an impactful folk artist. You don't need to be a saint. In Stan Rogers' case, you just need to have a strong passion for and understanding of the people around you, history, and the styles you're writing in. A lot of my information for this episode came from the 1988 documentary One Warm Line, The Legacy of Stan Rogers, which is available for free on YouTube for anyone who wants to learn more. At the end of the documentary, we hear from Robert Cusick, a sailor who almost died at sea. He explains that he found himself clinging to a lifeboat in the middle of a storm, ready to give up and let go. But then he started singing the lyrics of Stan Rogers' song, The Mary Ellen Carter, in his head. Rise again, rise again. He says that if it weren't for that song popping into his head when it did, he wouldn't have had the strength to hold on. And that's the power of folk music. I will, of course, end with some of the Mary Ellen Carter, but first, a folk event that is happening very soon. I found out from a member of Exceedingly Good Song Night that this year will mark the first instance of Transtrad, a queer traditional folk festival happening in Olympia, Washington, from June 5th to 7th. As their website explains, Transtrad is an inclusive festival that celebrates and elevates trans and gender nonconforming performers in traditional folk music. So check it out if you can. I know I've talked about a lot of West Coast events, and that's just because of the people who have contacted me. So if you've got a folk community that you'd like to promote from the East Coast or the middle of the country or beyond, send me a message at folkfilespodcast@gmail.com. As we conclude this episode on Stan Rogers, I should mention to anyone who did not know about Stan Rogers before that this is a cult and you are now part of it. The recent clips of Stephen Colbert singing Barrett's Privateers to Robert Plant, a song he already sang with Michael Bublé 4 years ago on the show, should give some indication. I was once caving in West Virginia and randomly discovered that there's a large subset of cavers who love Stan Rogers. I sang some of his songs with our caving guide at the top of our lungs, and luckily the cave system was strong enough to handle it. If you're in a group of people and you want to know who else is in the cult, just try belting, "Oh, the year was 1778, at the top of your lungs, and just see what happens. Trust me. Thank you so much for listening.
And you to whom adversity has dealt the final blow, with smiling bastards lying to you everywhere you go, turn to and put out all your strength of arm and heart and brain, and like the Mary Ellen Carter, rise again, rise again. Rise again, though your heart it be broken and life about to end. No matter what you've lost, be it a home, a love, a friend, like the Mary Ellen Carter, rise again, rise again, rise again. Though your heart it be broken or life about to end, no matter what you've lost, be it a home, a love, a friend, like the Mary Ellen Carter, rise again.